Welcome everyone to Wednesday Night the Lab. I'm Tom Zinnan. I work here at the UW-Madison Biotechnology Center. I also work for UW Extension, Cooperative Extension. And on behalf of those folks and our other co-organizers, Wisconsin Public Television, the Wisconsin Alumni Association, and the UW-Madison Science Alliance, thanks again for coming to Wednesday Night at the Lab. We do this every Wednesday night, 50 times a year. Tonight, it's my pleasure to introduce Jay Zambito. He is with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey, which is also part of UW Extension Cooperative Extension. He was born in Rochester, New York, got his undergraduate degree at the University of Buffalo, got his PhD at the University of Cincinnati, then postdoc at Central Michigan University and at West Virginia University. And then a year and a half ago, he came to Madison to work at UW Extension, Cooperative Extension, Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. Yesterday, he drove up to Eau Claire so that today he could be at a meeting and participate and help out with a meeting that the DNR had on frac sand science and policy. Then he drove back here so that he could be here tonight. I think that's exemplary of the kind of hard work and smart work that so many of my colleagues at the UW system, UW Platteville where I went, UW Madison, UW Extension have long shown, and why this university system has long been a leader among public universities in instruction, research, and public service. It's because we both work hard and work smart in public service. Please join me in welcoming Jay Zambito to Wednesday Night at the Lab.
Well, good evening, and thank you for coming to the talk tonight. My name is Jay Zambito. I'm at the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey, which is part of UW Extension. And this is part of the outreach we do at the Geological Survey, sharing information with Wisconsinites about frac sand and related natural resources in the state. And I'd like to point out my colleague, Mike Parson. He's a hydrogeologist. He couldn't be here tonight, but he plays an intimate role in helping put together these presentations and do this outreach. So here's the outline for the talk. I'm going to start off with describing what is the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. And then the rest of the talk is going to be about some of the frequently asked questions that we get at the survey. So I'll talk about the history of sand mining in Wisconsin, what is frac sand and how is it related to hydrofracking, why is frac sand mining happening in Wisconsin, how is frac sand mined, what research related to frac sand is the survey doing, and then finally, where can you get more information? Wisconsin Geological Natural History Survey is part of UW Extension, and the way I see it, the governing principle of UW Extension is the Wisconsin idea. And so that's research conducted at the UW system should be shared with citizens throughout the entire state. And at the survey, I think we take that a step further. We like to think that it's important for the university to go out to the citizens of the state and figure out what research needs to be done. And so we're actively traveling throughout the state. Our office is in Madison. But we're throughout the state asking citizens, what would you like to know about the geology of the state, and what can we do to help you? This is our mission statement here, and I'd just like to point out some of the parts that relate to the talk I'll be giving today. The Wisconsin Geological Survey provides objective scientific information about the geology, mineral resources, water resources, soil, and biology of the state. And these activities support informed decision-making by government, industry, business, and individual citizens. Okay, so to start off, we are not a regulatory agency. Okay, we're not the DNR. We are part of UW Extension. And our organization is directed by our state geologist, that's Jamie Robertson. We have 9 faculty members, 4 GIS specialists and cartographers, an additional 16 academic or other staff. We have numerous student interns from throughout the UW system that come and work at the survey. And we're divided into 3 major program areas. There's the Bedrock Geology Group, which I'm a part of, the Hydrogeology Group, which Mike Parson I mentioned earlier, he's a part of that group, and then there's the Quaternary Geology Group, the group that studies the glacial sediment in Wisconsin. Another thing that we do is we catalog the natural resources as they pertain to geology in the state. And so in Mount Horeb, just outside of Madison, we have our Research Collections and Education Center. And there we have drill core from more than 2,000 holes spread throughout the state. We have cuttings from more than 11,000 water wells. Cuttings are the material that gets flushed up when you drill a hole if you're not coring, but you're boring. So we have material from 11,000 additional water wells. We have approximately 50,000 hand samples from hundreds of studies throughout the state, going back over 100 years. We also have field notes, geophysical logs, thin sections, assays, all different types of geologic material or samples that have been collected and processed pertaining to the geology and hydrogeology of the state. And the estimated value of this is around $130 million. However, the majority is irreplaceable. A lot of the material we have maybe was drilled for some of the metallic mining exploration in the northern part of the state. If that didn't pan out, if it's not economical then, it's probably not going to be economical now, and so those cores will never be drilled again. So it's important that we catalog and store these materials so that when questions come up in the future, we can answer those questions. Okay. And at the end of my talk, I'll put this slide back up. This is our website, and it outlines some of the materials that we have that are freely available for download. We have state, regional, and county maps, general interest maps, fact sheets, reports and journal articles, and some of those examples are shown here with those images. So what is the history of sand mining in Wisconsin? Okay. Sand mining, which is a form of non-metallic mining, has existed in Wisconsin for over 100 years. There's thousands of non-metallic mines throughout the state, and they're present in every county in Wisconsin. And there's various types of non-metallic mining. And so some of those would be crushed stone aggregate. That's the picture on the top on the left. On your right on the top. That's in the eastern part of the state. That's a limestone quarry. That limestone is a reef deposit. And that's going to be crushed up and used as the base for roads as they're putting in new highways. So that's crushed stone aggregate. There's sand and gravel quarries. The picture in the middle, that's from Iowa County. That's a sand mine. It's a form of industrial sand mine. That sand originally was being mined for cow bedding and golf course sand traps. There's also flagstone for landscaping or building. So the picture on the bottom, that picture there, that's up by Stevens Point, and that's a sandstone quarry, and they're quarrying out flagstone. There's also mines for clay. And then in general, we say industrial sand mines, and frac sand, which I'll be talking about in more detail tonight, that's one form of industrial sand. Okay, so the message to take away from this slide is that sand mining is not new in Wisconsin. Sand mining has been here for a long time. And there's many uses for industrial sand. The traditional uses in Wisconsin, why the mines were first started in Wisconsin, were for things like foundry molds, glass making, water filtration or well filter packs, so at the bottom of wells, abrasives for sandblasting, golf course sand traps. I mentioned cow bedding earlier as well. And then there's also the use of hydraulic fracturing or hydrofracking for unconventional oil and gas. And it's this use that has driven the demand for Wisconsin sand. And the demand has increased dramatically in recent years, and that's because this sand meets the specifications for use in hydraulic fracturing. And I'll explain how it's used in later slides. So the question is, what is new? Okay, what is new with this recent increase in industrial sand mining is that these industrial sand mines are much larger than in the past. These are typically not mom-and-pop operations. These are very large mines, and they're close together. In the parts of the state where this resource can be found and easily extracted, there's a high density of mine operations. That includes mines, that includes processing facilities for sorting the sand, and that includes rail loading facilities for shipping the sand outside of Wisconsin to places where they're extracting oil and natural gas. There's also a high rate of mineral extraction regionally, and there's been a dramatic increase in the number of new mine and processing plant proposals, more so than counties were used to handling in the past. And so to give you an idea of how that's increased, this is the map of Wisconsin. The brown area, that's Cambrian sandstone near the surface. So I'll explain Cambrian sandstone in a minute. But that's the sandstone that meets the specifications, some of it does, for use in hydraulic fracturing, uses frac sand. So that in certain parts of the state, that sand is found near the surface. And the red dots are a combination of frac sand mines and processing plants that are either active or in development. So not every red dot is an active mine. Okay, it might just be a place that where there's been a permit that's been applied for to open up a mine or a processing plant. But what I want you to notice is that from 2011 to 2013, the number of permits and sites that were opened dramatically increased. And you can see that they're highly concentrated in certain parts of the state. So what is frac sand and how is it related to hydraulic fracturing or hydrofracking? The recent increase in industrial sand production is due to the demand for frac sand. I told you earlier that frac sand is one type of industrial sand. And you can see that in recent years, frac sand has made up about half of the industrial sand production in the United States. And previous to that, it was not even close to being half. And so it's the demand for sand for use in the hydraulic fracturing process has driven the increase in the number of new mines and processing plants that are being opened, not just in Wisconsin, but primarily in Wisconsin, because as I'll show you, Wisconsin has more of this resource than any place else in the United States. And so what is hydraulic fracturing? Hydraulic fracturing is a technology that's used to go after unconventional oil and gas. And so when I say unconventional oil and gas, in the past, the typical oil and gas that was extracted is called conventional oil and gas. And that was oil and gas that migrated from some source rock, represented here by this darker color, and migrated up through a porous rock, and say the sandstone, and then was trapped below this impervious layer. And in the past, a conventional resource, which was the primary target for oil and gas, would be extracted by drilling down to that reservoir and then pumping out the oil or gas. Okay. Unconventional oil and gas, instead of going to the reservoir where the oil and gas has migrated, unconventional oil and gas goes straight to the source rock. So it's going to the rock that holds the organic matter which has been converted to oil and gas. And the hydraulic fracturing technology is being combined with another technology, and that technology is called horizontal drilling. And what this enables oil and gas producers to do is drill down to the source rock and then drill horizontally along that source rock. And what they do is, along that horizontal well, they inject down, and then along the horizontal well, they inject water and sand at high pressure. That fractures, it cracks the rock, okay, so that's the hydraulic fracturing, cracks the rock, and then the sand flows into those fractures or cracks. Now, when they release the pressure, the sand stays behind and it holds open those fractures. And by holding open those fractures, it's increasing the amount of porosity and permeability such that the hydrocarbons, oil and natural gas that's trapped in small spaces within the source rock, can migrate through those fractures and then up to the well pad at the Earth's surface. Okay, so that's what hydraulic fracturing is. Okay, and that's where Wisconsin sand is being used in the hydraulic fracturing process. Okay, so something I want to point out is that hydraulic fracturing is not occurring in Wisconsin, okay, not for oil and natural gas. In fact, Wisconsin does not have any economical oil or gas deposits. Wisconsin has abundant sand resources, and that sand is being used as a proppant in the hydraulic fracturing process in other parts of the country. Okay. So where is that sand going? The sand being mined in Wisconsin is being shipped to three major areas in North America. The first being the Bakken play, that's in North Dakota, the Barnett and Eagleford in Texas and Oklahoma, and then over to the Appalachian Basin for the Marcellus play. These are all unconventional resources, and Wisconsin is centrally located to provide sand to those three major plays. So again, just to sort of summarize, sand is being mined in Wisconsin. That sand is being shipped, typically by rail, to three major plays in North America. And there at the well site, that sand is being mixed with water using big pumps, and it's injected down into the ground along these horizontal borings into the unconventional reservoir, into the source rock, where that rock is fractured. The sand gets into those fractures, and when the pressure is released, the sand stays behind and props open the fractures. So frac sand is a proppant. Okay? And one more thing I just want to point out is that while this is something frac sand mining is going on in Wisconsin, and that sand is being transported throughout the United States for use in the hydraulic fracturing process, really what's going on in Wisconsin plays a role globally. And so this is a map here that shows basins with shale gas and shale oil across the globe. You can see some have been assessed and some have not. And then on the right, I have here some information that was put out by our current administration that shows that U.S. production of oil has been rising under Obama, and that U.S. dependence on foreign oil has been declining under the current administration. On the right, on the bottom, that shows you where we've seen payroll change in non-farm payroll since the economic downturn. And one of the things I want to point out is that in states where this unconventional resources are being extracted, North Dakota, Texas, you can see West Virginia, they're all seeing increases in their payroll. And so while sand mining is going on in Wisconsin, the sand is being transported across the United States, Wisconsin is also playing a role in U.S. energy independence and the nation's economic recovery. So why is frac sand mining happening in Wisconsin? And to answer that question, we're going to have to take a trip back 450 to 500 million years ago to understand where these deposits came from, how they were deposited, and why they have the characteristics they do that are ideal for use as a proppant in hydraulic fracturing. So if we go back 500 million years ago, Wisconsin was much closer to the equator due to plate tectonics. You can see this red dot here. This is where Wisconsin is thought to have been. Wisconsin was also underwater. Okay, at this time, sea level was higher. This is North America here, and you can see that part of North America was above sea level, but the majority of North America, including Wisconsin here, was below sea level. And in fact, Wisconsin was really one giant beach. That's a good way to think about it. It was very shallow water. It was one giant, yeah, I know. I wish it was a beach right now, too. Wisconsin was one giant beach, and on the shoreline, there were deserts, okay, because it was drier at that time, too. And so it's the environment, the depositional environment, where the sand was being deposited of a beach and a desert that gave the sand the characteristics that make it meet the specifications for hydraulic fracturing. On the right is a reconstruction that shows different depositional environments across the same area. And so this yellow here going around the rim, that's the shoreline. You can see Wisconsin here, okay, was one giant shoreline at that time when this material was being deposited. And the thing I'd like to point out while we're on this slide before I move on is that while this shoreline was here 500 million years ago, a lot's happened in the last 500 million years. So other places where the shoreline was 500 million years ago, those deposits have been eroded. They're gone now. Okay, so some parts where there was a shoreline 500 million years ago, you know, those deposits are not present. In Wisconsin, however, Wisconsin has been has not had a complex geologic history in the last 500 million years. And so a lot of that material has not been eroded away. And in fact, Wisconsin has more of these shoreline deposits that are near the surface than any place else in North America. So here's another way that you can look at the distribution of these deposits in Wisconsin. On the left, okay, this is a basic geologic map of the state. Here, this darker blue, this is Cambrian. These are the Cambrian sandstones that I was just telling you about that were deposited in shallow water or in desert environments. And they wrap around the state. You can find them all throughout the state near the surface, but they're even down here in the southern part of the state, too. They're in the eastern part of the state as well. It's just that they're below other rocks. And so if we take a cross-section going through the state, like we're slicing a cake. So if we did a cross-section like this across the state, and we looked at it down here, we would see in the western part of the state, those Cambrian age sandstones, those are near the surface. And as we get to the eastern part of the state, and we're going into a feature called the Michigan Basin, which had a lot of accommodation space, a lot of sediment could be deposited there. The Cambrian sands are also there, but they're buried beneath younger rocks. And so the sandstone is present in other parts of the state, but it's not near the surface. And that's important. If you're thinking about mining this resource, it needs to be accessible. And so the areas where it is accessible are in the western part of Wisconsin. And so this map here is something the Geological Survey has put together. It's freely available on our website. And this shows sand deposits that are within around 100 feet of the surface with minimal overburden or minimal amount of other material on top. And so this is what we call an industrial sand potential map for Wisconsin. These are areas that have more of an industrial sand potential than other parts of the state. Now, that sea level wasn't always high. Okay? The sea level oscillated. It would rise. It would fall. And through Wisconsin's history, as that sea level would rise and fall, the shoreline would move. And so in certain parts, certain times, the shoreline was right on Wisconsin. And there's different rock formations that were deposited in that beach and desert environment at the shoreline. There's the Waniwak Formation. Another unit is called the Jordan Sandstone. And then another is called the St. Peter Sandstone. Those are all sandstones deposited in the shallow water beach or desert environment. And those are the deposits that are being mined for use in industrial sand. And I'll explain in a minute why they meet those specifications. But these environments where you have sand being constantly reworked, moved around, are ideal for creating the characteristics that make a good proppant, that make a good frac sand. One of the things that these deposits, these depositional environments do is that they make the material better, more rounded. And they make the material more spherical. And they also make the material mineralogically mature, meaning that through all the time that these grains are bouncing around with each other, they're getting wet, they're getting dry, minerals that are not stable at Earth's surface, they'll start to break down. Okay? They'll break down, they'll weather away. Minerals that are stable, well, they're going to last. And so quartz, the mineral quartz, is very stable at Earth's surface. It's very strong. And so through time, as you have this environment recurring, and you have these depositional processes occurring on the material, the sediment, you're going to, in the end up with a lot of quartz sand. And that's what's being mined in Wisconsin. And so what makes a good frac sand? It's round. It's spherical. And just to differentiate between the two, you can have, this is a spectrum of different grain shapes. You can have something that's highly spherical, but it's still angular. You can have something that's well-rounded, but it's not spherical. And then you could have something here that has high sphericity and is rounded. And that's a lot of the sand that we have in Wisconsin that is deposited in these depositional environments is round and spherical. It's also a specific size range, and it turns out that that's the size range that's ideal for use in hydraulic fracturing. And again, the size range is related to the depositional environment. It's also poorly cemented. Okay? That sand does not have a lot of cement holding those sand grains together, so it's easy to extract. It's easy to mine. And again, I mentioned it's mostly quartz. Mineral quartz is a high crush strength. And so if that sand is going to be placed 10,000 feet below Earth's surface under high pressure, it's not going to crush when you release the water, the pressure from the water, and the sand remains behind to hold open those fractures. Quartz is going to be able to withstand that pressure. So on the bottom here, I have different types of sand in different stages of processing. This is the raw sand that came from a frac sand mine. You can see it is a tan color. That's because there's some clay minerals that are present. That sand has been washed, and you can see here the clay is removed. You can see these nice spherical rounded quartz grains. And then here the sand's been sorted into different size fractions. And so these are industry numbers 2040. These are the larger grains. These are typically used for hydraulic fracturing for oil. In the 40-70 range, they're finer. Those are used for hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. And then the fines, this is a material which is typically thought to be too small for use, and it turns out cows like it, so this does make good cow bedding. Although one of the things that's been occurring is hydraulic fracturing has been going on for longer and longer. Different size fractions are being tried out to see how well they work for extracting oil and natural gas. And some of the fine material does work in some of the geologic systems. And so a lot of this material does have an application for use in hydraulic fracturing as frac sand. And so what I'd like to pass around for those in the audience tonight, I have examples here, little vials of these different size fractions. I'll pass these around. You can take a look at them. I have cards here. This is our website. It's on this business card. And on the back, you can have your own little bag of frac sand. You can all take that home with you. It's the business card's worth more than the sand in the bag. Yeah. And then the other thing I'll pass around is these are some drill cores that we have through some sand deposit. I ask that you try to keep them in the bag. One of the things you'll notice as this gets to you is that the bottom of the bag is full of sand that's fallen off these rock pieces. And that's because it's very poorly cemented. It's just falling apart. And if you put your hand in, you can feel the grains rubbing off with your fingers. But this will give you an example of what some of this sand looks like that we collected through a core. And also gives you some idea of some of the variability. The different color is related to some of the different auxiliary minerals or cement that are present in this different sand. I'm just going to touch on this slide quickly. I put this in because a lot of questions come up about other types of proppants, other things that can be used besides sand in the hydraulic fracturing process. The one on the left, that's a low-density ceramic proppant made by a company called Carbo. You can see here that they've done extensive testing about the properties of this proppant and how it will work, used in hydraulic fracturing. On the right, that's a proppant that's been coated with resin that has other properties that serve different applications of the hydraulic fracturing process. But currently, except for very special cases where maybe these are more ideal than the sand, currently these are not an economic alternative to using sand in the hydraulic fracturing process. They're too expensive to produce. And the other thing I'd like to mention that is, you know, with a switch to, say, a ceramic proppant, that means clay is going to be need to be mined somewhere else, right? Everything we use is coming from natural resources. It's coming from something that's being mined or extracted from the earth. Okay, so there's other factors that are important, and I'm not going to touch on these today, but it is worth saying that demand plays a role in frac sand mining, how much sand is being mined, where it's being mined. The presence and type of overburden. And so, as I mentioned earlier, if the sand is buried, like in the eastern part of the state, under hundreds of feet of other material, then it's not economical to extract. However, if it's at the surface or near the surface in the western part of the state, it is economical. The presence of the water table. Is the sand present above or below the water table? If it's in a hill above the water table, then you don't have to dewater the sand to extract it. If it's below the water table, then you would need to dewater the sand, remove the water in order to extract it, or you'd have to dredge it out from below the water table. Transportation infrastructure plays a large part. A lot of the cost in sand, the markup that occurs from Wisconsin to the well sites that I had mentioned in places like North Dakota, a lot of the markup comes from transportation. And so where are the locations of things like railroads and harbors or interstates for transporting the sand? And then finally, political and regulatory climate plays a large role on how much sand is being mined in Wisconsin and where it's being mined. Okay, so before I move on then to how the sand is being mined, I'd just like to put up this slide. This is from the DNR's website. They do a great job documenting and inventorying where the different mining operations are. As you can see in the upper right, this includes mining operations, processing operations, and rail operations, rail loading operations. It also includes active and inactive sites. And so in the bluish-green color, those are active sites of these three varying types. In the orange color, those are inactive sites. That's something that's been permitted and may never open up. It all is dependent upon factors like demand, political, regulatory, climate, things like that. The DNR, I know that this is available on their website. I advise you to check it out if you'd like more information about any of these individual sites. And they're constantly updating this as frequently as possible. Okay, so how is frac sand mined? This is a cross-section here of a hill in one of the more typical mining operations. And what I've shown on the left is this, we call it the stratigraphic framework. Those are the different layers of rocks that are found in this scenario, this model. One of the things I'd like to point out here, this is the water table in this scenario. Okay, here's a creek or a river. There's the water table. The unit there that would be being extracted in this case would be the Waniwok Formation. And that's, in this case, is above the water table in a hill. There is some overburden. There's another unit here called the Tunnel City. And then there's some topsoil or glacial material that's draping the hill as well that's going to need to be removed if this resource was to be mined. And so what the steps would look like in one situation, because every mine is different. Every mine is site-specific. They all have slightly different geology. They all have slightly different reclamation plans that they've worked out. So in this case, the topsoil here is being removed, and it's being stored for later use in reclamation. here in stage number two, the overburden is being removed. And so that then they can get at this resource that they're trying to extract, in this case, the industrial sand. They've now removed that sand from the wall, and then they sort the sand. Some of the material from this unit meets specifications, and that's going to go to a processing facility for further processing into different sizes. Some of the material in this unit does not meet the specification, so that's also going to be piled up on site and then used for reclamation. In this example, the reclamation moves forward while the mine is operational. And so as they're extracting the resource from the hill, they're building up, in this reclamation plan, they're building up the hill that's going to replace it. And in the end, you have any of the material that was not extracted is making up the hill that remains behind. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is take you into one of these mining operations that we've worked with closely at the Wisconsin Geological Survey. They've been very helpful in allowing us to collect information, collect data in our studies about industrial sand in Wisconsin and how that relates to other natural resources like hydrogeology or the groundwater. So this is an aerial view. To give you a sense of scale, down here, in the bottom, you can see this is a standard football field. And as you go off into the distance, so we're looking to the south, this is in Chippewa County. As we're looking to the south, obviously that scale is going to change. But here in the foreground, that would be the scale. One football field would be here in this part of the mining operation. So these are large operations. And the forested area here, this is a hill. And this is the hill is the resource that they're extracting at this specific mine. So now we're going to take a slightly different view of this mining operation. I'm going to walk you through the steps, and then I'm going to show you pictures of each one of these steps. And so number one here, this is the main entrance to the mine. All the truck traffic is entering and leaving the site at number one. Number two, this is that same hill. In this case, at number two, it's the vegetation's been removed. You can see here, here's part of the hill that they haven't gotten to yet. That will be a later stage of the mining process, and that still has the trees on it. Number three, that's when the topsoil has been removed and some of the overburden. Number four, this is the resource that they're going to extract that's left. And you can see right here where my cursor is, that's a drill rig where they're going to drill down and set charges for the blasting of this resource off of the wall here. So the shadow here is from the wall. Number five is where that material is going to fall in front of the wall. And then they're going to use loaders to bring it over here to number six. Number six is a crusher that they have on site, and they crush the material down from boulder size material down to smaller things and try to free up the individual grains. And then it's mixed with water, the sand, and it's then pumped in a slurry over here to their on-site wash plant. So in this site, they do some preliminary washing on-site. And number seven, that's at on-site wash plant. Number eight, that's the sand then that they've decided meets specifications. They're going to send that on for further processing. And that's sitting on the site drying. Okay? It costs more to ship wet sand. And so in this case, they're going to let it dry for a few days, let the moisture come off of the sand. Number nine, this is where they're loading that sand. The stuff that does not meet specifications, the stuff that's never going to leave the site, that's number 10. Here's the hill that they're reclaiming. While they're actively mining in this particular site. 11A and B, these are settling ponds. 11A, this is the clay that was removed during this washing process here. The clay that's being removed, they're settling that out here, and then they're going to just put that back in for the reclamation. 11B, this is water that's draining off the sand pile as they dry the sand on site. And then 12, these are stormwater runoff ponds, because with the vegetation removed, when there is a storm, there is runoff that occurs, and so they catch that here in these ponds at number 12. Okay, so let's take a closer look at these different parts of the mining operation. Yeah, so this is number one. This is the first part in the operation. You're removing the cover. So it's vegetation, that's soil, or it's undesirable rock. And so you can see the hill here, and the hill is being removed. And this back here, this pile, that's the reclamation pile that I showed you earlier that they're using on the other side of the site to build the hill back. Yeah. The sand then, once they get to the deposit they're interested in, it's blasted off, excavated, and or dredged, depending on particular site where the water table is. Here they're loading into a loader. They're going to bring it over to the crusher You can see this truck here is spraying water down on the pathway to keep the dust down at this site. Here's the crusher. So the sand is going into the crusher up this conveyor, into the crusher, mixing with water, and in a slurry, it's being pumped across the site, okay, over here to the wash plant. Okay, and then, so I'll show you the wash plant, and then again, this is the pile where the sand that is going to go for further processing offsite. That's where that pile is right there. This is the washing operation. Different sites do it differently. In this case, they're washing off the very fine material, the clays. They're using a flocculant to settle out the clays out of suspension, and then they're letting them settle here in these settling ponds, and then that material is going to be scraped up or further dried. These are some more settling ponds, drying ponds, and then used in reclamation. Other mine sites do the settling in tanks. It varies site to site and what their mining permit is and what the reclamation process is. So every site is individually has individual characteristics. So here, this is the pile of sand stockpiled on site. That's going to go on for further processing. You can see here's a truck coming to pick up some of the sand to move it to the drying, sorting, and transportation facilities. This is one of the facilities where the sand is being dried and sorted. This is a dryer here. It's being dried with natural gas. And then it's going through this sorter. Within this sorter, there's a bunch of big screens. Here's an example of some of those screens. And the sand is passed through the screens, which are shaking, and the sand settles out then into the different size fractions, depending on what the demand is and what the contracts this company has for the different size fractions for whoever they're supplying it to. And then finally, the last stop in Wisconsin is to the rail load facility. You can see here, this is a processing plant combined with a rail loading facility, and each one of these silos is the different size fraction of sand, and that's being loaded directly into trains and then shipped to the well site in places like North Dakota, West Virginia, Texas. So just a little bit more about the mining process and things that are handled by other agencies or really other concerns that people have regarding the mining process that I won't have a chance to go into. Wisconsin DNR regulates high-capacity wells, and so there's a lot of water being used in this process, and the DNR regulates the permitting for that, for putting these wells, for using the water. There's surface water impact, stormwater discharge, process water discharge. It's all regulated by DNR. The counties, they regulate the reclamation plans under NR 135, and it's the reclamation plan's different for every site. I've seen reclamation plans where there's a hill, the resource is being extracted from a hill, and a smaller hill is going to be part of the reclamation process to replace the larger hill that was there. I've seen reclamation plans where it turns into agricultural land. It was a hill before with forest, and now it's land that can be used to grow corn or soy. I've seen a reclamation plan where a hill was removed and it was turned into a cranberry bog, so a cranberry farmer can expand his operation. Other concerns that are outside of my expertise as a geologist, but which are nonetheless very valid, are future land use, economic impacts, noise from blasting or truck traffic, and the impact the trucks might have on the roads, as well as air quality in the form of fugitive dust. That means dust leaving the site. Okay, so as I start to wrap up the talk, I want to give you a little bit of information about the research related to frac sand that's being done at the Wisconsin Geological Survey. The Wisconsin Geological Survey is currently collaborating with the United States Geological Survey in Chippewa County on a groundwater study. In some of the area that has some of the highest density of frac sand operations. And this study is aiming to get at a couple things. One is, how does the pumping of high-capacity wells affect the water levels in nearby wells, whether they're private wells or agricultural wells, or streams, things like trout streams on the surface of the land. And then how might the changes in pumping rates and our understanding of how the placement of wells and how they affect each other, how might we use that information to make more informed decisions going forward, not only in this specific area, in this part of the state, you can see here in western Chippewa County, but in other parts of the state as well that are seeing increased pressure on their groundwater resources. And just to summarize some of the preliminary information and preliminary data that the studies put together, when the study was initiated, they decided that if they're going to look at high-capacity wells being put in place for industrial sand mining, to really understand the effect of these new wells, you really had to understand the effect of all the wells in the area. And so this combines data then from industrial sand mines, from high-capacity wells at the mines, municipal water supplies that are tapping into groundwater, and irrigated agriculture, which are also using high-capacity wells. In general, the wells are going down to similar depths to access the groundwater, but the pump rate varies considerably. So in industrial sand mines, they're removing 20 to 95 million gallons per year per well. The majority of that, though, is either recycled on site and reused, or it infiltrates back into the ground during the drying process or in the settling ponds. And so a lot of this water is recycled and doesn't necessarily leave the site. Municipal water supply, they extract 80 to 90 million gallons per year per well, and the majority of that water does leave the site because it has to go off for treatment after we use it, and then it doesn't always end up back near where it came from after that treatment process. Irrigated agriculture is removing the least amount of water, 10 to 30 million gallons per year per well. In the study area itself, so again, this is a small study area, it's important to think about how we know what they're removing, what their pump rate is, but how many wells are there? In this study area, there were 5 industrial sand wells, 6 municipal water supply wells, and then 31 agricultural high-capacity wells. And they're all operating in different parts of the year. So in the industrial sand mining, because it's a water-intensive process, the mining process cannot occur throughout the entire year. When it's as cold as it is out today, it's very difficult to use water to wash sand. And so that's about a 10-month operation. There's 10 months out of the year when they're pumping groundwater. Municipal water supplies, we drink year-round, and so they don't stop. And then agriculture, as you can imagine, there's about 5 months when they need to pump water for use in agriculture. And I guess I talked about the fate of the water in sand mining and municipal water supply. In agriculture, I should also mention that a lot of that water ends up being removed either through plant growth or evapotranspiration and doesn't necessarily make it back into the groundwater supply. Now, if we take a step back and look at some of the data compiled by our colleagues at the DNR, this looks at the different types of high-capacity wells or their different uses throughout the state. And so we were just focusing on the west central part of the state, but as you can see throughout the state, there's a lot of high-capacity wells, and you can also see there's a lot of different reasons for putting in a high-capacity well. And so where the majority of the population is in the southeastern part of the state, that's this blue color here. The majority of the high-capacity wells are for municipal water supply. You get into the central sands area, the majority of those are for agricultural irrigation. Cranberry production, there's a concentration of wells for that here. And then things like non-metallic mining, the brown, you can see that they're concentrated in areas where you're either mining sand or there's some over here in the eastern part of the state where they're mining aggregate. There is some water that's used in that process as well. And so water use varies throughout the state. There's a lot of different ways to use water and a lot of different ways we need water to live life the way we do in Wisconsin. And I think one of the takeaway message from this is that the groundwater is like a cup and everybody's putting their straw in. And so we need to think about who's putting in their straw, how many straws is everybody putting in, and how often are they taking a sip? Because it's a shared resource, and we obviously want this to be something that can be used sustainably. In the Bedrock group, one of the things we're working on is characterizing the mineralogical and elemental variability within the stratigraphic record, or really the bedrock throughout the state. And some of that data lends some insights into the industrial sand resources of the state. And so what I have here, this is a core. And what we've done with this core is we've gone through with an instrument called X-ray fluorescence analyzer. And what that does is allows you to back out the elemental concentrations at a given interval through this core. So this is depth going down. And these are the different data points we collected. And what I've done here is taken the different elements that we get from this analyzer, and I'm using them as proxies for different things. And so on the left here, things like iron and sulfur, I'm using that as a proxy for the abundance of iron cement in the rock. That would give the rock that reddish color in some of the samples that I passed around. Other elements, titanium, aluminum, potassium, can be used as a proxy for clay minerals, the amount of clay minerals that are present. Silicon can be used as a proxy for quartz sandstone. Again, that's the material that's being mined for use in industrial sand. And calcium and magnesium, those are good indicators of the amount of carbonate cement, because calcium and magnesium are found in carbonate cements. And so if we look throughout this core, and in particular at these areas highlighted in pink, the areas in pink, these are two different intervals that are potential industrial sand resources. And so the top one's the Jordan, the bottom one's the Waniwak. And one of the things I'd just like to point out is that these resources, when you compare them, these different layers, the Jordan and the Waniwak, they're very different. Okay, so something like the Waniwak has very high very similar concentrations of silicon throughout. It's a relatively pure quartz sandstone. Right? You might notice there's not a lot of clay minerals that are present. There's not a lot of carbonate cements that are present, and that's the material I passed around. You saw how that rock just falls apart in your hands. You can rub it apart with your fingers. It's because it's not well cemented. If you compare that to the Jordan and another industrial sand resource, which is being mined for use as frac sand, you can see that it's much more variable in its silicon concentration. It has calcium and magnesium. It is cemented in different intervals. And some intervals have a large amount of clay minerals present based on using these elements as proxies. And so what I'd just like you to get out of this slide, and one of the things we're learning in this research as we do these type of analyses from rock materials throughout the state, is that the geology is highly variable. Okay, these different resources, these different layers of rock have different properties. And if we really want to make an informed decision about how we're going to extract, how we're going to use, or how we're going to protect these natural resources, we have to have the baseline data first to be able to say, okay, this is the composition in terms of mineralogy or elemental variability. And so that's something that the survey is working on and actively, and we have proposals in review with the DNR and with the UW system to get additional funding to collect this type of data. And so I'd like to wrap up by showing you where you can get more information. Again, this is our website. Things like state, regional, and county maps, those are all available for free. We have general interest maps as well, fact sheets, including a fact sheet on frac sand in Wisconsin, reports and journal articles, as well as an abundance of other information. We have a nice website that we put together detailing how frac sand is mined in Wisconsin. Some of those images and pictures I showed you tonight, you can find that on our website in detail, as well as some of the frequently asked questions that we get at the survey. Okay, well, with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention.